Welcome back to the Educated Patient Podcast. I'm your host, Mike DeMarco, and today we are joined by Dr. Michael Howell, sleep neurologist, who sits right at the crossroads of sleep medicine and brain health. Dr. Howell is the chief medical officer at GEM Sleep and professor and division of head of sleep medicine in the Department of Neurology at the University of Minnesota. Today, we're going to dive into the topic of sleep apnea, how it ties to Parkinson's, and many other topics relating to sleep health. And how it impacts your greater wellness overall, not just specifically with sleep, but how it ties into all these other aspects of wellness in your life. So, Dr. Howell, thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited for this conversation. Offline, you mentioned you're calling in from the winter baseball meetings. And you mentioned the Red Sox, so we're not going to talk about them. If we could talk about the Yankees, that would be great. But I'd love to hear more just about your background.
Sure.
And then we'll dive right in.
Oh, great, Mike. It's great to be here. So I'm a neurologist and a sleep specialist, and I've been doing this for about 20 years. My career is focused on helping improve brain health through better sleep. So that sometimes involves treating sleep disorders like sleep apnea, and sometimes it just involves trying to help people align their circadian rhythm. That's your body's 24-hour clock, so that you're able to perform your best when you're supposed to. For example, elite athletes, such as in Major League Baseball. Much of my research is focused around specifically how do we help people sleep better to decrease their risk for Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and conditions like it. And there's been a tremendous amount of research in the last decade specifically showing exactly what we suspected. Surprise, surprise, if you sleep better, your brain functions better tomorrow, and also it has better long-term health, and you're less likely to develop these horrible neurodegenerative disorders.
Can you give the textbook definition out the gate here, just to clarify exactly the difference between, you know, maybe just there's a common sleep disturbance or disorder, but then there's actually like specific sleep apnea or some other conditions that are most common for people struggling with sleep.
Yeah, the most common trouble people have is they're just not getting enough sleep, right? I mean, we live in a world that promotes sleep deprivation, where we go to bed late, streaming shows on our screens. We then have to get up early the next morning for work. The most commonly ingested substance on the planet is caffeine, which is contributing to overall levels of sleep deprivation. In addition to that, many people just go to bed, they can't fall asleep, they're struggling with insomnia, they then have quite a bit of fragmented sleep the next day. Many people are struggling with changes in their body's 24-hour clock. So some people are naturally night owls, which is fine, except when they have to get up to go to a job in a bank at 7 o'clock in the morning or get up for school. Other people are exactly the opposite. If given the opportunity, they'd fall asleep in the evening and wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, which can be quite frustrating. And then 70 million Americans are struggling with obstructive sleep apnea, which is the inability to successfully breathe and sleep at the same time at night.
Yeah. On a personal note, I wanted to ask you this question because I think our son, our my one of our sons is 2.5 years old, and I've been getting hit with a lot of social media posts, maybe because I stopped on one time. So now the algorithm is just feeding me.
Of
but
course.
it'll be a picture of a child with like crazy hair, right? And my son is waking up with crazy hair, and to no surprise, he's also regularly congested because he goes to daycare. And so now, you know, in preparation for this call, I was excited to just personally talk to you about this, because I think there's something we could do for him with airway obstruction or whatever it might be in his scenario.
Yeah, so breathing issues during sleep occurs throughout the lifetime. You know, I focus mainly on people who are adults, but kids absolutely can have breathing troubles at night. The most common reason before adolescence for sleep apnea is just enlarged tonsils, just enlarged inflammatory tissue in the back of the throat. And so this is one of the reasons why kids often sleep much better after they have their tonsils taken out, if it's appropriate for that to happen. And some very, very interesting things happen for kids who are, and I'm not saying, Mike, I hope this isn't the case with your kiddo, but for those who are really struggling breathing at night, if you do take their tonsils out when they're kids, they have a they grow. They actually have a real dramatic growth spurt. And the reason why that is during deep slow wave sleep, that's when we have growth hormones. So if you've ever, Mike, looked at your kid in the morning, like, oh my goodness, this kid grew last night. It's because they did. That's when all of us grow, both, when we're kids, but also if you're working out, if you're trying to gain muscle mass, it's at night. Sleep is anabolic. It actually, the growth hormone leads to bone growth for kids and muscle growth for adults. And then in addition to that, kids often have a much better ability to pay attention, alert, and focused in school in particular, and also listening to their parents as well, which is its own magic trick, right? Simply because when you are sleeping better, you're able to attend better during the day.
I imagine this is exactly the type of message you're delivering at the winter meetings, just with regards to the significance of sleep. So we talked about the kids a little bit. Let's go all the way on the other end of the spectrum,
Sure.
and not, General Pop is in the middle of this bell curve, but on the other end of the spectrum are the highest performing athletes in the world, which are
Sure.
those that you're about to talk to. What is that message that you're delivering down there?
Well, so elite performance comes down to innate ability, training, and nutrition. And those three, these guys just they got it dialed up to about as close to 10 as you can possibly get. But there's a fourth component, which is rest and recovery. And everyone kind of has this understanding that sleep is really important for brain health and for athletic performance, but they don't know how to do it. It's kind of like giving, if you had no experience, Mike, if I just showed you a gym, like a whole bunch of weight, the bench presses and the squat rack and I just gave it all. I said, I gave you the keys to it. And I was like, Mike, go for it. It's all yours. Like, how would most people do with that without any instruction or any guidance? Well, they probably hurt themselves, right? They probably hurt themselves, and they certainly wouldn't get the outcome that they're looking for. And so, kind of what we're doing is just to kind of go through various levels of knowledge and build foundations of how to help people fundamentally sleep better, all the way from the very, very basics, which is just trying to work on individual circadian rhythms so that they at least are able to wake up in the morning and be able to perform for a 12:30 start. Conversely, a 7 o'clock start later in the day. All the way up to hacking strategies such as working on pitches, working on reaction times, visualization, skill attainment, and just working on those right before napping. So you can actually one way to get an extra practice in is just to visualize for not very long, only about 3 minutes, right before you take a nap or right before you do nighttime sleep. All the way to really trying to optimize breathing. So, if you or I have a little bit of snoring without any sleep apnea, it's probably not that big a deal. On the other hand, if your job is to try to hit a pitch with some movement on it at 101 miles an hour, you better have your sleep about as perfect as we can possibly get it. All in the idea of just gathering some extra. Getting an extra edge here or there, 3% improved reaction time here, 5% decrease error rate there. And sleep is how you do that. Another way to think about it is when you practice, and doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete or a golfer, or you're in high school trying to learn how to play the violin, it is when you are sleeping that you master that your brain masters that skill. And so you really don't know how great you can be until you have great sleep.
It's very interesting. I, without the academic or like clinical knowledge that you have, I always had this concept in my head that when like my hands were actually practicing the skill mastery, it was very much like, I'm working on a document live, But when I go to sleep, that's when I actually download it into my hard drive and save it on file, right? And then I could go back and access it. But sleep is like that function for us as you're talking. That makes sense in my head.
And yeah, I like that. I also sometimes use the word file compression. It's when your brain is trying to filter out the noise and hold on to the signal.
Interesting. And we talked a lot about performance, right? And I think this will start to pull us back towards the general pop side. And most of the individuals that I work with in the general population world are first coming for, I want to just overall feel healthier. I want to fit into my clothes. I want to lose weight. Like all of these common things that we hear. And I imagine that the sleep has a tremendous impact on our ability to make our metabolism function appropriately, not just have reaction time to hit a pitch, right? But
Oh,
to
yeah.
make sure that our metabolism is actually functioning during the daytime as well. And so, what kind of how does that tie into the recovery side, not just the optimization side for performance?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're supposed to have about 10 to 12 hours of an overnight fast. That's the way normal human physiology is supposed to work. So you have lunch, you have breakfast, you have lunch, you got dinner, and then for the most part, for about the next 10 to 12 hours, you should not be your body really should not need to take in additional calories. And the reason why it works is that your entire system is programmed to be able to go into an overnight fast. And most people, if you wake up to go to the bathroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're probably not waking up and saying to yourself, God, I'm starving, right? But if on the other hand, in the middle of the day, you went 8 hours without eating, you probably would feel that way. And the reason why that is that your body's handling of insulin, glucose, growth hormone, it adjusts so that your body can maintain that overnight fast. And so in terms of recovery, in addition to just maintaining good metabolic health, which is critical, you are also decreasing if when you sleep well, you decrease the negative inflammation that is exacerbating pain. You heal. Your tissues get healthier, and you have muscle growth. It's anab as I mentioned before, it's anabolic, and all that. And it's a really important homeostasis. So you want deep, restful sleep so that you can be alert and really active during the day. And so one of the ways, and this isn't necessarily for elite athletes because elite athletes already inherently get this, but I think this is appropriate for everybody else. Everyone has asked you at some point in your life, how did you sleep last night? And the reason why they ask that question is because there is an assumption that how you slept last night is going to lead you to function better today if you slept well. Well, guess what? It works the other direction as well. So a good question to ask that no one ever asks is, how did you wake today? I'm quite certain, Mike, no one has ever asked you that. On the other hand, if you think about it, like if you're eating well, if you're getting exercise, getting social engagement, staying off your phone, avoiding putting unhealthy, highly processed foods into your body, and instead getting the macronutrients right, guess what? You do all those things right, you're going to sleep better tonight. You want kind of the oscillation between really really doing wakefulness well, that'll help you sleep better, and vice versa.
Interesting. Yeah, and to tie my son back into it, we woke up this morning and he was, for the first time in a few days, we were like, "Who is this guy? This isn't the guy that's woken up." It just like the mood was so different, right? It's instantly recognizable, just different energy, smiling, less whiny. And at that age, he has no idea what's going on, right? But it makes total sense
No.
with what you're describing.
Yep.
What are some, like, I want to start to get into some of the risk factors or things that listeners can start to recognize for themselves if maybe they weren't even mindful of the fact that they had sleep disruption or sleep disorder or potentially even sleep apnea. What are those risk factors? What are the like starting indicators that people could start to be mindful of?
I think probably what's more important than anything is if you get an adequate amount of sleep, and I'll let every person define that themselves. If you're getting an adequate amount of sleep and you're still not feeling rested when you wake up in the morning, that is very worthwhile to evaluate. Several reasons, several different conditions could cause that. Most notably is obstructive sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea is the inability to adequately breathe at night while we're sleeping. Incredibly common. 70 million Americans, at least, only 15 million have been adequately diagnosed. And this increases your long-term risk for cardiovascular disease, as well as, and this gets directly related to my research, as well as growing evidence that long-term brain health, i.e., avoiding dementia, avoiding Alzheimer's disease, avoiding Parkinson's disease, is really important to identify and treat sleep disorders, in particular obstructive sleep apnea.
You mentioned a few times now increased risk for cardiovascular disease, dementia, Alzheimer's. We talked a little bit about, mentioned Parkinson's a little bit. Is there an underlying connection between all of those potential conditions with inflammation, or is it inflammation plus other things to be considering?
Yeah, there's numerous factors that are happening that contribute to poor sleep, leading to these underlying brain disorders. Number one is just if you're not breathing well at night, this is increasing your catecholamines, so like norepinephrine, epinephrine, adrenaline, as well as adverse corticosteroids, so cortisol. All of this leads to a stress response throughout your body. Yes, in your brain, but also in your heart. Increases your risk for clotting, negative inflammation, increases your blood pressure, and that happens 24 hours a day. So if you're not sleeping well at night, all of these adverse inflammatory responses are up 24 hours a day. In addition to that, there's growing evidence of something called glymphatic clearance, which is really, really interesting. So in your body, you have the lymphatic system, your lymph nodes, right? Your lymph drainage, which drains out all metabolic toxic waste that your cells produce throughout the course of the day. Well, as it turns out, your brain does not have a lymphatic system. It has something called the glymphatic system. And the glymphatic system works primarily when you're in deep, slow wave sleep. So that's when your brain washes out all of the various metabolic waste products and toxins that have built up during the course of the day. And so that's why it's critical to get that deep, slow wave sleep, or you're going to get this accumulation of abnormal protein waste. One example that many people have heard of is insoluble beta amyloid, but also which is one of the proteins that builds up during Alzheimer's disease. But tau is another protein that builds up in dementing disorders. Synuclein pathology, which builds up during Parkinson's disease. And this is why growing evidence shows that if you help people sleep better, i.e., particularly if you fix sleep apnea, your risk of developing these neurological neurodegenerative disorders goes down.
Really interesting. I have a few family members that have diagnosed sleep apnea. They have the machines. I remember from their experience, there's just a lot of friction, one, to get them diagnosed because the studies are time consuming and not convenient. Two, the machine isn't fun to wear, especially, next to your husband or wife. It's like, I and then three, both of these individuals have adjoining comorbidities with the sleep apnea. It's like not just the sleep apnea. Sleep apnea has then also led to them having other risk factors like either diabetes or prediabetes or heart conditions, or there's it's not a siloed condition for them. And when you're talking here about increased risk of cardiovascular disease and dementia and all these other things, I've experienced that firsthand, and it's back to your point in the very beginning. Professional athletes have those three things on lock, right? But there's this fourth one that's kind of not really talked about or dialed up as much. And I think that's one reason I really appreciate this conversation, because it's certainly, as more information is coming alive and more people are becoming self educators, at some point they're going to come across sleep and say, hey, this is the stone that hasn't been flipped over to the fullest extent yet.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. And let me give some reasons for optimism. Okay, so evaluating for sleep disorders, in particular obstructive sleep apnea, you no longer need to come into a in-person sleep center the vast, vast, vast majority of the time. I mean, well more than 90% of people can be diagnosed at home. All right, so that should take that burden down fairly significantly. And let's talk about treatment. So, obstructive sleep apnea is the collapse of the upper airway at night during sleep. So we need to come up, and it is related to weight, but it's not completely related to weight. So you can be of normal weight and still have obstructive sleep apnea. But of course, if you are overweight and you lose weight, that'll almost certainly help make the sleep apnea better. So we're talking about a holistic, full life kind of approach. On the other hand, we're going to help you get healthier and lose weight if we can help fix your sleep, right? Like it's really hard to get up and make the right choices when it comes to exercise, and the right nutrition choices if you're not sleeping well. So reasons for optimisms are, one, you can get diagnosed at home. Number two, there are numerous options for the management of obstructive sleep apnea. Let's talk about CPAP for a second. So many, almost CPAP is a mask that goes over the nose that helps keep the back of the throat open. It is certainly, we've all heard of stories of people who do not do particularly well with CPAP, but I think it's also important to share the story that you really don't know how you're going to do until you try it. And 50% of people love, with a capital L, bold, underline, love their CPAP machine, especially once you give it a couple of weeks and get used to it. Those individuals' biggest problem is what am I going to do once every other year when the power goes out? Because they enjoy using their CPAP machine so much. Oh, by the way, the answer is just prop yourself up in a recliner. You'll be fine. So 50% of people love it. You can also get about another 25% of people to really do well with CPAP if you have the right level of coaching and encouragement. Like if you just hand somebody a CPAP machine, they may not do particularly well. But if you have a really good support program, such as what we have at GEM Sleep, which allows you to get diagnosed at home as well as a CPAP machine at home, and then online coaching, you can get there. However, it's worthwhile to note that there are other options for the management of sleep apnea. There are oral appliances, dental devices that look a lot like athletic mouth guards. And what they do is they just basically help hold the jaw forward. There are surgical treatments for obstructive sleep apnea. And just recently, GLP-1 weight loss medication, Zepbound, which is tirzepatide, there are other weight loss drugs we have all heard about. There is evidence showing that using those therapies in combination with CPAP both treats sleep apnea as well as helps you lose more weight. So I very my, Mike, I appreciate you sharing kind of the challenges we've had historically in terms of the diagnosis and management of sleep apnea. I think we're at a very unique moment, and just a plug for GEM Sleep as a unique opportunity for people to meet with a provider on relatively short notice, very conveniently be evaluated and managed at home.
Yeah, I love that. I'd love to park the car for a second around
Sure.
GEM, because
Sure.
I've had experience working with individuals who have had success with virtual physical therapy, right? And it's not appropriate in all instances, but
Right.
in a large percentage of instances, it works really well, right? And you don't have to take time off of work. You don't have to add this into your already packed schedule to commute and stay there and commute back. And so it's really interesting to hear that there's now these options coming to life specifically for sleep, because again, back to one of my family members, I remember when the doctor first recommended that they go get a sleep study, the doctor was almost like, listen, I could pretty much guarantee that you have this, but we need the sleep study.
Yeah, the confirmation. Yeah.
for confirmation. And it took them months to schedule the sleep study. They kept kicking the can down the road because there was such a barrier to entry that was wrapped
Yeah.
around that in-person sleep study. And this is years ago, right? And it's like, I have to basically take a whole day off of work. I have to go there and sleep. It was like a whole thing. And so to now hear that there's other options available, I think will dramatically increase the likelihood that people will be curious about exploring this too, without saying, I'm not even going to think about that because I don't have the time to
Sure.
go insert
That's
myself
exactly.
in a sleep study.
Yeah, and I work at an in-person sleep center at the University of Minnesota, and it's extremely valuable, particularly for very challenging, complicated sleep disorders. However, for the vast majority of people who either are fairly certain they have sleep apnea, or their spouse or their bed partner has been telling them they snore and they stop breathing, they're otherwise, awfully healthy. Going through GEM, going through an online clinic, just going to the website, filling out the questionnaire, it's free. And then getting, when appropriate, getting a home sleep test mailed to them, completing the home sleep test, and then doing virtual visits to figure out what the appropriate next steps are. Extremely convenient. The wait times are less than a couple of weeks. Contrast that with my in-person sleep center, where it's often months and months and months you have to wait. I think I think it's critical that we have both. We have to have the in-person centers, but we also have this option for these tens of millions of people out there who are struggling, and we can take advantage of very efficiently and with innovation and inexpensively help people get their sleep taken care of.
Yeah, I love that. It's very similar to what we're seeing in the blood work world, right? Like I got hooked up with a company, and within 3 days of first communicating with them, there was a phlebotomist sitting at my dining room table. And a day within 24 hours of the phlebotomist being there, I had a 15-page report from a clinical
Oh,
team
wow.
on my blood work, right? And so, but just 1 year ago, either I didn't know or this option wasn't available, and my blood work option was PCP, sit in the office. I probably got the whatever the 10 things are that everybody gets. And these innovations that are coming to life, I think, are gonna dramatically increase or improve the wellness that we need right now, specifically here in America.
Yeah, kind of a large statement is, healthcare has been built around a certain group of people who have healthcare access, have quite a bit of free time, are kind of dedicated patients. And I completely understand there are times in medicine in your life where you absolutely need that. But we're not particularly good if that's not, if you're busy, if you don't, maybe you don't even have a primary care provider you see very frequently, because a lot of people with obstructive sleep apnea are otherwise young and healthy. And just kind of meets you on your terms. Healthcare up until now has really not met that moment. But I think, there's a lot of options out there for sleep. It's GEM Sleep, but there's a lot of options out there for people to kind of turn their life around and get healthier.
Can we, before we move on from GEM, because I'm very curious about this now,
Sure.
what
Sure.
for, maybe for somebody that knows that either personally or has second or third hand experience with somebody going through the in-person sleep study,
Yeah.
what does an at-home sleep study even look like? What is that experience?
There are a lot of different options. The one we use is called the WatchPat 1 test. It's extremely easy. It just gets mailed to you. You get a little few minute video to show you how it works. It's basically a wrist monitor and a finger probe. And you go to bed at night, you sleep with it. You just give us kind of a typical night of sleep as best as you can. Try to not have one of those nights where you got to wake up the next morning early to get to work. Try to give us as much sleep as you can. And then well over 90% of the time, we're able to get the information we need in terms of sleep staging, oxygen levels, how effectively your breathing and sleep is occurring at the same time. And then depending upon the results, you may be directed towards a CPAP machine. You may be directed towards a dental oral appliance. You could be directed towards weight loss. You could be just, encouraged, say, "Hey, Mike, good news. Yes, you do snore. You don't have significant sleep apnea. Try to avoid sleeping on your back. Minimize alcohol. All of those sorts of wellness strategies as well."
Who would be a good fit for considering this? Is it like if I snore regularly or my wife is annoyed by that, like am I a good fit to just test it just to be sure, or should I wait until I have some other condition?
Yeah, if you snore, if you're tired during the day, if you have high blood pressure, if anybody's said that you have trouble breathing at night, for any of those reasons, it's worthwhile to at least go online to MyGymSleep and just fill out the very free questionnaire, and the questionnaire will assess whether or not it's and it takes less than 5 minutes. It'll let you know whether or not it's appropriate for you to be evaluated for sleep apnea and whether or not a home sleep test is appropriate or whether or not you should go to an in-person sleep center.
Great. I want to bring us to a close here with a few random
Sure.
questions.
Yeah.
Just again, from working with individuals, these are just some things that I regularly experience, and one of them is, a lot of people are wearing wearables now, whether it's the Whoop or the Oura Ring or literally all of these options that are out there, and many of them are tracking sleep and they're doing a decent job of giving something that was never there, right? What from the doctor side, like, why does alcohol have such a significant impact
Oh.
on sleep score?
So alcohol does a couple of things. One is alcohol gets you coming and going. So like, we've all, for the any of you who've drank an alcohol before, notice that there is a intoxicating effect, and then there's a withdrawal effect. And unfortunately, it interferes with your sleep in both ways. So as you have the intoxicating effect of alcohol, that's going to worsen sleep apnea. And I'm sure, many people who are listening to this have heard the story of after they've had a couple of drinks, their bed partner tells them that they snore more, or maybe they notice that they're gasping, snoring. But after that, okay, after the intoxicating phase is through, and your liver is now starting to metabolize the alcohol, you then have very fragmented sleep. So you get the unfortunately you get exactly the opposite. So you don't get deep sleep. You get very light, non-refreshing, often distressing sleep because you're in REM sleep and you're often having very vivid, distressing dreams. And just as a personal note, I notice this. Like if I'm now 51 years old. If I have alcohol tonight, I just know I'm not going to sleep well. It's not dramatically bad if I drink in, moderation, but I just know with one drink, my sleep is not going to be as refreshing. Primarily because as I, withdraw from it 3 to 4 to 5, 6 hours later, you're going to get the more fragmented sleep. And Mike, I love your comment on the wearables because now I'm sitting here at the Major League Baseball winter meetings, and I get all of these players and personnel from the teams, and they all walk up to me and they all show me, how they slept last night. And by the way, it's almost always terrible. Of course, we are at a conference, but I do appreciate the fact that people are valuing sleep. Certainly the understanding, the insight that sleep is important. People just now need the tools in order to get to where they want to be.
What are some quick hacks for on both sides of sleep? So let's start with the front side of sleep going into sleep, because obviously the most common thing people know of is melatonin. But then I also want to hear some hacks on the backside. Like, let's say, for example, I had a few drinks or I randomly had a choppy night of sleep. Like, what are some things on the backside on the waking that I could at least put into play to put me in a better position?
Yeah, let's actually start there. I always actually, usually by the time someone has come to me, they've tried 15 different strategies at night in order to sleep better. And actually the best place to start is usually the morning. So, in the morning, especially if you are tired and groggy in the morning, bright light, sunlight preferably. If you live in a place like I do in Minnesota in the wintertime, get yourself a light box, 10,000 lux light box, and just start giving yourself a sunrise every single day. Try to wake up at about the same time every single day. I realize that's not always practical. So if you're going to sleep in on the weekends, no more than 2 extra hours. So if you got to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning during the week, yes, you can sleep in on Saturday and Sunday, but only until 9. Try to, as we talked about before, Mike, try to do wake well, right? All from the moment you wake up until you go to bed at night, think about exercise, think about the food you're putting in, avoid the old processed foods. When you go to the grocery store, eat on the periphery, right? Everything that's fresh, frozen, The stuff that can spoil, eat that. Don't eat the stuff in the boxes. Your sleep will be better because of it. And then just be mindful in the evening. If you're going to drink, drink in moderation. Minimize the caffeinated beverages. And then just for nutrition, also think about just getting the macros right, getting the right balance of proteins and fats and carbohydrates. Get exercise. You do all of those things right, your brain is going to be more appropriate for sleep. And then at night, think about your environment. You ultimately want a bedroom that is cool, dark, and quiet. And about an hour before that time, you want to start getting yourself there. So, dimming the lights down if you can, minimize the light on your phone. And if you can, drop the temperature. So, whatever the temperature is that you like to have it at, say, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, take it down about 2 degrees because that's just a cue to your body that it's time to start preparing for sleep. And then ultimately, I mean, Mike, you talk about having a young kiddo. What do we do with kids? We build really healthy routines for them. We get them into their pajamas. We brush their teeth and wash, snuggle up and read a book. Adults need some version of that as well. Is it really a surprise, after we're pounding through emails, doom scrolling on social media, getting frustrated with the various things at work, and then all of a sudden we turn the light off and expect ourselves to be able to fall asleep? No. You got to give yourself kind of that healthy routine, at least an hour, preferably 2 hours, kind of as you're leading into bed. You're going to sleep better. And then if anybody tells you you snore, you struggle with breathing at night, or if you have high blood pressure, if you're suspicious at all about possibly having sleep apnea, get it evaluated and taken care of.
Love that. Last question here.
Sure.
Are you an 8 hour guy, 7 hour guy, 9 hour guy?
I'm about 7.5 usually. Eight on a good day, about 7.5. But
Great.
more important is just than the volume is actually the timing. I usually wake up at about the same time and get bright light every single day, and that keeps my rhythm in line pretty well.
Love that. Dr. Howell, thank you so much. This episode was jam-packed. Appreciate your time. I appreciate our conversation. I hope this isn't our last because I feel like there's many other lanes within sleep that you and I can dive into specifically. But I appreciate your time today. For those that are listening, just give them a quick note on where they can find you, connect with you, anything like that.
Yeah, please go to GemSleep, mygemsleep.com. Just look it up in any search bar, and if appropriate, get yourself evaluated for sleep apnea.
Love that. Thank you so much. Enjoy your time at the winter meetings. For those that are listening, for more information on sleep disorders, sleep apnea, and all things wellness, and any condition that you may be struggling with, please visit theeducatedpatient.com. I'm your host, Mike DeMarco, and have a great day, everyone.